Okay, good evening, everybody. It is December 17, 2018, and this will be the last meeting we have before the holidays. And it's good to see everybody here, and you know, we have Jan and Terry in the background, and Jim Beerson too, so they're my support. John is sick again, still. They tell him he has the flu, but, you know, and then he has some other stuff going on. Besides that, you know, he's had some heart surgery, so that gives us a little cause for concern. You know, so he has to be careful when he gets sick, when you have, like, a underlying heart condition. So that's what we're worried about a little bit. I mean, not that he's that serious, but he's not good. He doesn't sound good. And he obviously, you know, John be here if he could drag himself here. So he's pretty sick. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and do a Bible reading to start off, because that's what we usually do. I'm not following what John wrote. I'm just going to go ahead and pick one that I think is pertinent, and I think it'll be from Matthew chapter 14. And I'll read down a little ways, because this is kind of pertinent for some of the stuff that's going on in our time. Okay, chapter 24. And Jesus, being come out of the temple, went away, and his disciples came to show him the buildings of the temple. And him answering said to them, "Do you see all these things? Amen, I say to you, there shall not be left here a stone upon a stone that shall not be destroyed." And when he was sitting on the Mount of Olivet, the disciples came to him privately, saying, "Tell us when these things shall be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming and the consummation of the world." And Jesus answering said to them, "Take heed that no man seduce you, for many will come in my name, saying that I am Christ, and they will seduce many. And you shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you be not troubled, for these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be pestilence and famines, and earthquakes in places. Now all these things are the beginnings of sorrows. And then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and you shall be put to death, and you shall be hated by all the nations for my name's sake. And then shall many be scandalized, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. And many false prophets shall rise, and shall seduce many. And because in iniquity had abounded, and the charity of many shall grow cold, but he that shall persevere to the end shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world for a testimony to all nations, and then shall the consummation come. Where therefore you shall see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of by the prophet Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, he that readeth, let him understand. Then they are that are in Judea, let them not flee to the mountain. And he who is on the housetop, let him not come down to take anything out of his house. And he that is in the field, let him not go back to take his coat. And woe to them that are with child, and that give suck in those days. But pray that your flight not be in the winter, nor on the Sabbath, for then there shall be great tribulation, such as had not been from the beginning of the world until now, neither shall be. And unless those days had been shortened, no flesh should be saved, but for the sake of the elect, those days shall be shortened. Then if any man shall say to you, 'Lo, here is the Christ,' or 'there,' do not believe him. For there shall rise a false Christ and false prophets, and shall grow great signs and wonders, insomuch as to deceive, if possible, even the elect. Behold, I have told you beforehand. If therefore they say to you, 'Behold, he is in the desert,' go ye out not out. 'Behold, he is in the closets,' believe it not. For as lightning cometh out of the east, and appeareth even to the west, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. Wheresoever the body shall be, there shall the eagles shall also be gathered together. And immediately after the tribulation of those days, and the sun shall be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of heaven shall be moved, and there shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, And then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with much power and majesty, and shall see send his angels with a trumpet and a great voice, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from the farthest parts of the heaven to the utmost bounds of them, and from the fig tree learn a parable. When the branch therefore is tender, the leaves come forth, and you know that summer is nigh. And I think we'll stop there. That's chapter 33, and that's enough. Okay. So the queue is open, and I hope everybody can hear me. I don't think I have them locked. If you want to unmute yourself, I think it's star 6. Terry, you want to check that and make sure I got this set right? I have the queue on. I think everybody's muted. I don't know if I have to turn that off for them to get in the queue. Okay, somebody just got in, so that's obviously working. Okay, well, there's a...
Yeah, it looks good to be.
Okay, so that's good. We're good to go then. I think last time I had the conference lock or something not right. People couldn't get into the queue, but it seems like we got that right now. So anyway, you know, we're still waiting for the courses to be finished. And, of course, John is under a lot of work to get that done, you know. And we have cases hanging out and, you know, to be answered or to be acted on that we haven't really moved on. Certain moves that we're going to be making with the cases that we file that we need to do soon, because they're going to get too ripe, and you know, and we can't let them sit there forever, because then they get the message that we don't know what we're doing, or you know what I mean, and they make their moves, as we've seen that they'll do. You know, they do a lot of presumption and assumptions and you know, running through their rules of law when they don't think you know what to come back with. So we have a couple of things that we need to do and we need to work on. It's just, you know, we're not going to be able to do those things probably until after the holidays and John gets better. But certainly we're not done, and they haven't really answered a lot of the stuff. They're just dancing around it because they can't answer. So that's where we're at, and we're not going to, you know, we want to implement this common law grand jury and all of this if we can, to how we go along. We still need administrators. I think we only have 1,000 and we need over 3,000. Actually, we need many. We need 4 per county. So we need like 15,000, I think it is. But anyway, we need people to sign up for that, because things are going on. And, you know, there's pressure from the top. We're kind of on the bottom here talking about the grand juries, because ultimately we're talking about grand juries in your counties. And, and as things can move from the top, eventually you're going to be pressed into service. You know, Donald Trump's talking about putting the rule of law back in. Well, putting the rule of law back in is going to require taking that system that's being run by the courts and by the corrupt judges and prosecutors and putting it back in the hands of the people. And that can happen overnight. And there's an awful lot of stuff going on that looks like that's the direction we're going to be headed, and we need to be prepared to pick up the reins, because if we're not, that's a vacuum. And when you have a vacuum, you have different factions that will get sucked into there, will go into there, and our second situation could be worse than our first if we're not careful. You know, I mean, it's pretty bad right now. You can't possibly think about how it could get worse, but believe me, it can. So, right now, you know, it seems that there is a lot of shakeup going on, and there's a lot of help, you know, coming in from these prosecutors that were put in. Of course, the news media doesn't report anything, because that their job is to hide this. They're not going to give us any good news, and so they give us a lot of misinformation, and that's what's going on right now. But it won't be long before there's going to be a shock and people are going to wake up. And then what are we going to do? We need that education. We got to implement the education, and we have to be prepared in order to do these jobs that are going to fall at our doorsteps, and nobody else is going to do it for us, especially in your county. So you should be looking, you know, at least structurally and politically and the way your county is running, and you should know who those forces are, and you should be prepared to at least talk to your sheriff and maybe even go to some of the meetings and the court hearings and stuff to familiarize yourself what is actually going on. I mean, some counties are a lot better than others, you know, and that goes without saying. You know, there's, I think the more populated areas, it gets worse because you have more people dipping their hand into the pie and you have more corruption. So, of course, if you're living in a very small area, hometown stuff, it's much easier to keep control and watch things. And that's where the deep state messed up, because they couldn't resist themselves doing voter fraud in these little towns where they went in and everybody knows everybody. And when they had an election, they had a majority vote for their person, and everybody in that town knows everybody, and they all voted for the other guy, and they said that's impossible. But they went ahead and frauded it anyway, even though, you know, it was very easy to gather the people up to see how they voted, and that their votes were completely negated and overvoted by even more people that even lived in a district. So they're out of control, and they're their own worst enemy. And we see things, good things happening every day as far as the exposing this. And I think you're going to see a lot here in the next coming month, in as far as, you know, the release of the documents of all the corruption that went on in the last election. And we have to be ready. And the other thing is, you know, I believe that there's going to be a major economic downturn because they got so much money printed, and all that's going to come home to roost. And you got to be prepared for that. You know, and so, and that I think is going to happen probably sooner rather than later. I hear some predictions. They say, oh, it'll go on another 3 years. I don't believe it. I mean, the deficit is, you know, we're talking a world deficit, and you know, in the hundreds of trillions of dollars, $260 trillion, beyond even imagination. And when that all comes home and crashes, I'll tell you what, they're not going to forgive any debt. They're gonna try to convert it. They're gonna try to come after it. They're not gonna let anybody get away with anything, except themselves. And we know that's how they operate. So just be aware of that. And that's something that's the system that we're gonna have to operate in while we're trying to fix this system. And education is the key point, because we can't do anything if we don't know what we're supposed to be doing. Besides knowing the Constitution, you also have to understand how they operate and how they use contract law to get around the Constitution. And so what happens is, you know, you end up contracting with them, and then you go, like for a traffic court, you go in and say, well, I declare my constitutional rights. And what you don't understand is that you gave them up the minute you registered your car and you got a license. And I came across this video that shows that you don't own your car, because you just have a right to use it, and the state owns it, and you have the fiduciary responsibility to upkeep it. It's their car. And your license says that you will drive it in such a way as they prescribe. And so you've contracted with them. It has nothing to do with the Constitution, because the Constitution protects us in our private lives, but in business, and you can sign up just like you join the service. You're giving up certain rights through contract. And even in the Bible, we saw that that one brother gave his birthright away to the other brother for a bowl of lentils, and it was upheld as lawful, legal. You enter into things, and you don't even realize. I mean, a lot of it is fraud because they're what they call adhesion contracts. But to come in and try to proclaim the Constitution when you've basically contracted with them, that is what they're using, and that's how they feel safe in what they're doing, and that's how they're getting us. So you have to educate yourself in as far as what are you really doing with all this stuff that they told us is necessary in order to get our signatures on papers and to dictate to us and remove our free rights of travel because of the papers that we're signing with them and agreeing to without even realizing it. So, you know, when the judge says don't bring the Constitution up, it's because you're in equity, and it's a contract dispute. And then when you go in there just screaming the Constitution and you don't understand what they've done to bring you into these chancery courts, he understands that you don't understand the law and you don't understand how they're doing this in order to trap you. And once you understand their game, you can change your wording and you can change your tactics and you can paint them in a corner, and then maybe you can prevail. And if more people would do that, then their system would fall down. So anyway, I just, you know, just be careful about going to court and yelling the Constitution, because that's not going to fly in their court, because the fact that you're in there is the fact that you contracted with them, and that's the only reason that you're in there. So anyway, we have some people in the queue. I don't know if Brent is here. I don't think that I don't know that we have any questions, Jan. I don't think there was too much there. Was there questions from our
email? I do have a comment or two, if you'd like.
Sure, go ahead. Now would be a good time to do that.
Okay. I'm glad you brought up the need for grand jury administrators. You know, that need could become critical at any point in time. We're up to 1,041 at the moment, and we need to keep an accurate tab on that number. If you find that you signed up and you're no longer able, or you have illness or something has happened, go to the web page in the blue banner at the top on the right side, click the grand jury tab, and on the drop down that opens up, click become a grand jury administrator. And if you are not one and would like to become a grand jury administrator, you go ahead and click the appropriate box, or if you are one and you want to drop out, you can click that, and that way we can keep an accurate account of the number of grand jury administrators. Now, we still need volunteer callers for the welcome committee. We've gotten several in the last few weeks, but we still need more. That seems to be a very continuing need. We had a volunteer from Connecticut, I believe it was Connie, who is working to arrange interviews of John and Gerard by the news media. She was working on some of the ones we were really interested in, like X-22 and Breitbart and so on. But I haven't heard back from her in, I guess, about 3 weeks. We're running short of speakers on the natural healing call, and if we don't get some response early on in the next year, I think we'll have to discontinue that. We haven't had many people step up lately. We probably have two or three more sessions that we can do before we run out of callers. So if you know someone that would like to give a 35 to 45 minute talk on healing or somebody's transition through healing, or maybe they're an expert on certain types of healing, anything but allopathic medicine, we're open to. So we allow about 5 to 10 minute Q&A after your talk, and it's a lot of fun. We've had a lot of good callers over the last 2 years, and so we would like to continue that. Now, the discussion call will continue through the holidays, so on Thursday night at 9, but the natural healing call will not. It'll resume January 10th. That'll be the first natural healing call from this point. There is none this Thursday or the next Thursday. Now, we seem to be getting requests for courtroom observers that kind of come in late, like several of them have come in after the newsletter's gone out, and we do have one for tomorrow for Tony Schack, I guess it is. He's going back into court on the 18th, which is tomorrow at 9 a.m. It's in room T611, the tower, and it's the Lake County, Illinois courthouse at 18 North County Street, Waukegan, Illinois. So if you have a little free time and would like to see how our court system is not working, by all means go in, sit down, take notes, write up an affidavit. If you find things are being misdone or abused, why, make note of it and get it to Tony. It's unfortunate because, you know, if we had another week notice, we could probably come up with more courtroom observers, because it's kind of hard to get notice on Monday afternoon or evening that, you know, Tuesday morning at 9 there's something going on. So it's kind of hard to schedule people to do that. So that's about all that I had, Gerard. So I guess time for Q&A. Oh, I can remind people, I guess, anytime you want to get in the queue, when the queue is open, Q&A queue is open, all you do is hit *6 and then a 1, and it'll drop you right into the queue. And then when your term comes up, Gerard will click the button, and you'll be free to speak. So go ahead, Gerard.
Thank you, Jim. And I just wanted to put out there that video that people should watch that are thinking about going into court, because it lays a very good line between the constitutional and the commercial. And it's just a little YouTube video, and it's called, if you type into YouTube, "Whose car is it? Does the state own your car?" on YouTube, it'll come up. And it's a lot of stuff from Family Guardian and High Frequency Radio, and they do online podcasting. And by the way, that's somebody that we should probably hook up with, because we could do interviews with them. A lot of what we do kind of fits into that. You know, there's places there that should be part of our education. Anyway, with that being said, we'll go ahead and I'll take the first caller in the queue. Go ahead. You've been unmuted. I can't really make out the name. Oh, it must be a VoIP dialer. Go ahead. You're unmuted. Do you hear me? Hello, hello. First call, you've been unmuted.
Is that what it is?
It says VoIP. Oh, I don't know. Oh, is that what it is, Thomason?
PTMC.net?
Yeah, PCMTC.net, yeah.
Thomason, you listening?
Are you there? Well, I don't hear him. Maybe we'll go to Daniel from Utah. We'll let Thomason come back in if he gets... we'll have to get back in. Go ahead, Daniel from Utah. You've been unmuted.
Okay. My question, comment, I think we're engaged in economic warfare, and when we get these grand juries together, my concern is how this world government works is whenever people start to wake up, they usually create some kind of world war or something, or martial law, whatever they have to maintain their power, because most people don't realize as much as the crooks in power how much power is at stake. And so they're always planning ahead to keep their power. And I think to get to the root of in other words, it's kind of a numbers game. To win this war, yeah, we need God on our side and you know, maybe aliens too, you know. But as far as here on Earth, that, you know, there's power in numbers, and I think to get those numbers on our side, it's, you know, there's a lot of people like, oh, they're struggling, they don't want to take the time to fight the beast. But a lot of even the wealthy people, they're wealthy enough, they don't care about fighting it. They just go along because that's an easy way to get wealthy, or stay wealthy, or not waste spend their time fighting the power. And so I think if people start creating credit unions based on knowledge and allegiance to the common law rights, I think that will speed up the grand jury process, but I also think it'll make it more powerful in fighting the world government, and also give people more motivation to join something that helps give them more freedom and wealth in their life through co-ops that are based on knowledge and allegiance to natural physical rights. And so I just wondering what your perspective on that would be.
Well, I think time is of the essence now. You know, we're going to have a money reset, whether you like it or not. And I'm not sure what form it's going to take. And I don't believe that we're going to end up with a cryptocurrency. That's what the powers that be want, but I don't think they're going to get that. I think as long as we have good people in the military and somebody like Donald Trump, we'll get a money system that's based on something the way the Constitution says, on commodities, on gold, on silver. And that's our opportunity to open up credit unions and do the right thing when that happens. And I think it is going to happen. And so I think that we got to be ready to fill that void. That's one of the vacuums I'm talking about. It's not just, you know, needing the grand juries. It's also us stepping up to the plate and how we deal with each other, legal, lawful, and legal tender stuff. And look at,
right, become
that
government.
Money's basically it's barter is what it is. You're exchanging a good for a good. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
And
gold and silver is
that.
A commodity.
That's right. And our money system was set up to be a system of commodities by our founders because they understood that that was godly. That was a good way for people to deal with each other.
It more efficient to barter when you're using gold and silver.
Exactly, because it's hard to carry all that stuff around to do a deal, you know, and especially when you're talking big numbers, you know. But, you know, and then, of course, all the abuses come in because before you know it, then next thing you know, there's usury, there's interest and interest on interest, and now we're selling gold that doesn't exist. You know, we're selling paper gold and paper this and paper that. And we got a big bubble going on, and that's where we're at now. Everything's a bubble.
Right.
Everything's a fiction. And isn't
right.
that just like the devil to set up smoke and mirrors, you know?
Yes.
And enslave
right.
us.
I think the people could even speed it up even more, and even to some degree not even be waiting on Trump as much if we start creating credit unions where we, based on, you know, as members of the grand, you know, juries or administrators, people that understand common law and natural physical rights, that if we start creating our own credit unions, but not even based on gold, but just giving each other equal credit one time based on knowledge and allegiance to natural constitutional rights, I think that would actually help the whole process be more effective and grow faster.
Well, that certainly sounds reasonable, and I, you know, maybe we need to write up a paper to explain to people how to facilitate those things, how to implement them. You know, I mean,
yeah.
everybody's used to get their check in the mail.
it's fairly simple, and when, like, say, a county, they get together and create their own little credit union, and they vote up on how much credit they want to give each other to start with. And then after that, it's just supply and demand. And if they, and as it grows and they think they need to give everyone a little bit more, then they do that just to determine the efficient amount of credit to give each other to promote their own economy. But that's a very simple and effective way of trading, just using numbers, just like we do our bank account today, except you're not using their credit system. You're using your own that's based on allegiance to rights rather than conspiracy against rights.
Right, right.
And it's a very simple thing to do. It just requires people that realize how powerful and effective that can be in creating real change.
Well, you know what? I think that's easier to do in a smaller community where everybody knows each other. So I think you're going to, you know,
but also, like in any organization around the country that has that too, you can join with them also and make it on a larger scale using the same system.
Right, right. Well, you know, a lot of things arise out of necessity, and sometimes you can't get people to move until it's
it's almost too late.
Exactly. But you know, the one thing about Americans is, as bad as we can get, we seem to rise to the occasion. I think there's a certain can-do attitude in America, you know?
Right, and that's true. And the more people are educated, the better they do that, and sooner they do it.
Right, right. And I mean, right now, that's our biggest enemy is the education system. I mean, the universities and the schools and what they're doing, you know, the children are coming out of there and not having any idea or any inkling of what true freedom should be and liberty and you know, and their proper place in the world. So that's up to us. And that's why why I homeschooled my kids. Because, you know,
way to go.
The government school, the public school system is just that. It's a government school, and they're not going to train them to be free. They're going to train them to act like good little slaves and robots. And that's exactly
what we got going on.
So, you know, private schools, of course, they're expensive, but homeschool. We got together with a group of people, and we homeschooled our kids. We bought a trailer. And according to the law, you can't homeschool other people's children. The parents have to be on the premises when you're doing it. So we said, that's fine. We got together with three families, four families, and we made like six grades, and every parent was involved in the teaching, and it's not so hard to do. And that's what we did.
You can consider the validity of that law. Is that even lawful? Of course it's not. It's rules of the corporation, which is just organized crime. So, you know.
Yeah, I understand.
As long as you keep it private and they don't know, it's like however it works best, you know.
Well, it's hard around, you know, the more populated you are. And even in a little town, you still got people that think the status quo is right. So if you're not sending your kid to school, everybody knows about it. So before you know it, they're over there. They're over there. And this community I live in is more sympathetic to it. So they have some rules and regulations, but they're not overbearing. Like you hear some nightmare stories where they show up at the house or whatever, you know, and they bust their chops. We don't get too much of that. As long as you're doing the good faith effort and you're keeping track of things and you got some documentation and paperwork, you know, minimal stuff to give to them, because these people that are sitting at these desks, they just need something to show their bosses, you know.
I think so, as long as you can prove your children are being educated, how can they complain about that? You know what I'm saying?
That's right. Of course, they like to get in and say, well, wait a minute, you're not getting them. We require this class and that class, and that's where you get into trouble with them, you know, because you might not agree with what they think is required learning. And so then you have to do some creative stuff around that, which you can do. There's no problem that arises that you can't get around, you know, and it's the whole religious freedom thing that basically wins the case at the end of the day. So if you couch it properly, you know, you do have the Constitution on your side, and you're not contracting with them if you're doing the things right. And ultimately, if you keep your head about you, and we have some really good organizations, we got some really good homeschooling foundations that actually offer legal help. They have lawyers and things that are you know, you join and you get so many hours of their attorneys, and they're very good. And probably if your children
ain't registered as corporate citizens, then they probably can't really tell you anything.
Well, you know, it's a fine line. I mean, some of the attorneys use the statutes against them. You know what I mean? They're that good that they can do that, you know. And generally speaking, the school system's really not prepared to fight a good attorney. They don't want to, and they walk a thin line, and they risk getting sued when they step over those lines. You know what I mean? When they start usurping your rights, and it's documented and you can prove it, then they got problems. So if you got a good and the other thing with having a homeschool defense, you know, organization is there's safety in numbers. And they don't want that organization coming to your defense. Because
one,
it becomes public. And then you got a lot of people showing up at court if they make an issue. And so ultimately at the end of the day, you can win if you do those things. But the main thing is to be proactive to prevent the problem in the first place. And what you do
right.
is you dazzle them with the footwork and you come off very professional, and they won't go there. You know what I mean? You just keep them from going there by how you present to them.
And with today's technology of videos and everything, it's actually very easy to educate children and do it as a team, because one person can make a video, and even if you're just paying for online schooling, it's so easy to do these days, you know, with a little bit of
commitment. You hit a nail on the head there, because the fact of the matter is there's really not much need for a physical building anymore now, is there?
Yes, there's not.
And therefore, we should be able to save taxes now, shouldn't we? Oh, God forbid.
Yeah, we should completely eliminate government schools and buildings, and it should all be done in community, you know, parents paying for their own children's education instead of the taxpayer to keep all the taxes down.
That's right. And I mean, I know when you get into the higher grades and there's things to be done with laboratories and equipment and stuff.
Right,
you
correct.
Can still get, they can have a
that
building.
That can still
there.
Be privately funded, yes.
That's right. And I mean, there's a lot of resources out there. And the other resources is sometimes even these corporations will.
In fact, some of the businesses that want to hire these people can set up their own schools to teach them. Under contract.
Yeah, and they donate. They do things like donate computers and all kinds of stuff. You know.
Yeah.
You know,
it's the old apprenticeship type education.
Right, and that's what we're missing in this country, for sure. But at any rate, these are all good things, and these are things that we have to work on.
Yes.
And look, it all boils down to the, you know, natural law and God's law, and this whole thing that we're doing with the common law grand jury. That's the foundation for this stuff.
Yes.
And that's why, you know, look at the education we have in NLA. You could take that and you could use that as a cornerstone and a basis for an education system in a public school. I think there's enough there that you could do a very good civics course for middle school and high school, you know.
Yes.
But
and if
anyway,
our children are better educated than the public children, how can they even make any complaint, you know what I'm saying?
Well, what I discovered, and I don't want to go too long, but in my experience, their biggest thing with school is they don't care if the kids are learning or they're not learning. It has nothing to do with the test scores at all, because
correct.
They already know they can't compete with homeschoolers. So it becomes, how much time are you putting in? It's almost like a jail sentence, or you know, you served your time in the military or you put your years in, and
it's
that's
mind,
what it's
yes.
about. The attendance.
Time
you're
and mind
attendance.
Control.
That's right. So one of the biggest things they can pull on is their attendance records. You want to keep good attendance records because, oh my goodness, you got to put the time in, you know. And now they like in the higher school, high schools, and that, and the middle schools and high schools, they require them to do a certain amount of community service, like they used to do for prisoners, like they're prisoners, you know. But anyway. That's all stuff that we can get around, and we certainly, it's certainly common sense on how to do those things. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead if you're done.
If we all organize and show it that we can actually do it better than the government, how can they make any complaints about it? And so that's I think a good thing to keep in mind is let's be competitive and actually do it better. You know, show that
right.
We can do it better.
Well, that's why they don't want us to do things better because they don't protect their jobs that way.
Well,
if
we go to an honest economy, most of these jobs are actually unnecessary. People don't need these low-paying, worthless jobs.
Now, isn't it? I mean, a lot of these agencies, especially like your social agencies, social services, and that. Basically, what they're doing is they're preserving their jobs, and whether they know it or not, and I think they do know it. It's unspoken, but you know,
yes,
everything
they
that they're
they
doing.
Do.
Is just making sure that they perpetuate the whole baloney. You know what I mean? They're feeding the system, basically.
But when we lower taxes and raise the quality of life, then jobs are not even as important because people create a lot more wealth and a lot less time. They don't have to spend all their time just passing time and wasting time and destroying value instead of creating value.
Right.
And that's what a rights-based currency does, is it creates real teamwork and wealth, and it does it very fast. Because it's based on real commitment and trust instead of conspiracy.
Well, we are standing on a precipice of a brave new world. I mean, we can go either way at this point.
Yes.
And, you know, I like that book, The 5,000-Year Leap, because that's where we are. We leap off from here, and that's going to take us the next 5,000 years into the future, if you think we have that long. But, you know, potentially, that's where we could go.
Yeah.
We know we have the technology. We know we have the knowledge. We know that these things are that, you know, were unheard of a few years ago, that they look like miracles, are that we have that technology that they're keeping from us. And that's going to be exciting. If we can bring those things out and use them, it's going to be a different world.
Yes.
And I hope I hope to see that.
The lacking question is, do we have the right accounting system to create the unity and accountability so that everyone can become better off through that actual rule of law?
Yeah, there you go. Therein lies the crux of the matter, right?
Yes.
So anyways, good talking. We got a couple more people
Thank
in
you.
There, so we'll move right along here. Thank you very much, Daniel. Always good hearing you. Okay, so we got Grace from Tennessee. You've been unmuted. Go ahead. Or Winthrop and Grace from Tennessee, excuse me. Can you hear me? Hello, hello.
I was muted. Sorry.
There you go.
This is Winthrop from Tennessee. Yeah, a couple of weeks ago on a Thursday night call, I was given a challenge, and it was to put together a plan for education, an educational challenge 2020. To put it out to all the elected representatives and all the secretaries of states to take the course. And our civics course to implement it in our high school. Of course, it could be modified. But put it together for everybody to take it, but they have to pay for it. They have to pay a $50 fee in order to take it, because I found that anytime you give something away, there's no detriment, and if they don't have a really great desire, they're not going to follow through on it. So I figured if they charge them $50 to take this test, and when they finish the test, they get a silver coin that's going to be minted as part of our campaign as a fundraiser to mint the silver coin and sell this silver coin as a collector's item. But it'd have a face value of whatever 0.999 silver's worth. And present that to all the secretaries of education and give them the time to take it over the year, 2019. And have it called Education Challenge 2020. And in order to fund the operation, I found the top six philanthropists that funded the educational system. And the billion, I mean, we're talking, you know, $30, $40 billion that the top six philanthropists in America contribute to the educational funding. If we can contact some of them and write a letter to them to get them to fund this operation, it's going to cost about $10,000-$15,000 a month to operate. And that's in order to take the test and have the tech support to support, you know, 1 million, 2 million people taking a test at any one time. And I put together slogans. Just need to write a letter, put a letter together in order to establish the challenge and make it a national campaign through NLA. Because we're just not getting anywhere. We're not getting anywhere. I'm surprised that we only have 1,041 people. And I've been with NLA since 2015, and it just seems like it's slow moving. And I think it's because it is free that we don't really have, the people don't have the desire to stick with it because they got no skin in the game. So that's
yeah,
what I was looking at.
It's true. And, you know, the other thing is you got the powers that be working against you that don't want to pick this stuff up because it threatens the system that they got going. So, you know,
we're going to try to target the people that are away. We're talking the mass majority of the people. We're not talking the people that are well off. We're talking the 80% that are going from paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah, which brings to mind the question: where's all the philanthropists on the conservative side? I mean, you know, look at, we got people like Bill Gates that are doing bad things with his money, you know, to facilitate Agenda 21, Agenda 2030. You got people like Bill Gates and Bezos putting all that money in. But look at, we have people that are patriots that have money, and they need to come. They need to step up to the plate and do some funding on this stuff.
This would be an ideal campaign, the National Liberty Alliance to put forth to the American people. I mean, we have so many really good slogans and quoting points from our founding fathers that can be used to capture the people's attention. And if we get a really good fundraiser going with a silver coin, we can sell silver coins as a fundraiser, but it also be as an award for completing the task, and the people actually pay for it because they put the money up front to take the test. They put their $50 in to take the test, and when in turn, they get a silver coin that costs $50. Because we're selling the silver coin as a fundraiser. That's how we're going to make some money.
Right.
So we just need the philanthropist for the upfront money, for the funding,
exactly,
for the minting of the coin. And I got Grace working on designing a coin for us to do. And I've got slogans, you know, save the people for the republic. The path back to liberty. Only the people can save the republic. Realize. A wealth of information. Educational Challenge 2020. And then we got, you know, sponsors. We can get the Tea Party in there. We can get the American Enterprise Institute. We can get Freedom Works. We can get Patriot Soapbox. We can get Hinsdale College. We can get USA Aid. And even NLA. But, I mean, there's really a lot of liberty organizations out there that are non-profit that'd be more than happy to contribute to this national campaign. And I think it'd be critical to get the secretaries of education, all of 50 states and the 7 territories, to take this test to see whether or not it'd be good to put it in their high schools for the juniors and seniors to take. Because it's 120 hours long, it'd have to be broke up into 2 years. Because there's no way you can get 120 hours in 1 year,
right,
in a high school,
right,
or modify the test, or modify the presentation for this, just for the Educational Challenge 2020. And There's a lot of things that can be done, but we're running out of time to do it. But we just need to put our heads together and come up with a plan and write a letter to present it to the president and the vice president and the secretary of education and all the secretaries of states of education. I mean, I think it's a viable thing because, you know, if we get all the elected representatives to take this test, then right there we got an educated group that are making laws for us. But I think it would be a good way of getting people to take this test.
Yep. I think it would be nice to be able to get them, but, you know, it's hard to get all those people's attention. That's the problem. They got a lot of noise up where they are.
We write them a letter directly. I mean, we could have composed a letter. I mean, I don't have the capacity myself to write the letter, but we can get a group of people together to form a committee to put together a letter that would be presented to the governor and the lieutenant governor and the secretaries of education. That will get their attention because it will be going directly to them. But then we could put an ad campaign out there for a National Education Challenge 2020. Now, I think the president would go along with it. I mean, we can get a lot of people that would go along with it. It's just a matter of getting the information out there. And the more sponsors we get, the more advertisement we'll get.
Well, it all starts with that first one. Yeah. So, I mean, how you get their attention and what kind of letter that would take, you'd need a committee just to do that, because I don't know. I mean, they're very good at ignoring letters. We've certainly sent stuff to the sheriffs and stuff to every judge and every prosecutor.
But we know why those entities are ignoring us. Okay, we know why they're ignoring us. I mean, that's what we're dealing with today. But this isn't for those that are ignoring us. It's for the people that don't know. I mean, you can't know what you don't know.
Right.
And the whole purpose of taking this test is to get them to know what they don't know. You know, realize. You know, we've been subverted for 200 years now. So it's just a matter of getting people to take this test. But if we don't put the challenge out there in a national campaign, then it's not going to happen. I mean, Grace and I, we've handed out over 200 handbooks. And I'm willing to bet you that I haven't got, there's not two people that have taken this test from those 200 books that we've handed out. Because they got no skin in the game. There's no real desire.
Well, that's what I was saying. You challenge the people. What you have to figure out is how to get them to get off their duffs and get some skin in the game. It's, you know, I mean,
it's going to take the right combination of words. Like JFK had a real good one. Not what you can do for your country, but what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. I mean, that's a really good slogan. It's a good slogan. You have to get it. That's what it's going to take. It's going to take a catchy phrase for people to hear it.
Well, I think you have the capacity to write. I think you could give it a stab at it and make an example, you know, and at least get that down on paper. It doesn't have to be perfect, but then you can give it to a committee. You know what I'm saying? You have to give them the ideas so that they can percolate it out.
I don't know how many people are on the call, but if we can get five people off this call to come together and meet up sometime and do some brainstorming, because, I mean, that's what it's going to take. You know, we're going to throw these ideas back and forth because we have all different ideas, but we got to put them all together and brainstorm to come up with a solution. I'm just giving the challenge, and, you know, I think a national campaign is what it's going to take. Well, it is possible, but we're just running out of time. But it's possible.
Yeah. And this is actually, you know, there's that Thursday night discussion group. That's where this should be brought up, where people can actually raise their hand and say, oh, well, then that's where the core group should come out of. That's gonna do the outline, make the outline to begin with, because then we can grow on that. You know what I mean? Once you have an outline, you have something down on paper, and some words there. You know, I mean, there's talented people out there that know how to motivate people. You know, people, there's people that actually sell their services to do that are good with running a campaign. Yeah. They're campaign managers and stuff. And should use their tactics. We could even find somebody that does that stuff that would be willing to give us their services. You know,
Well, we got millions of people that owe trillions of dollars. They have all this education and all this knowledge and don't have a job.
Right.
So,
well, it certainly sounds interesting, and it's certainly worth doing. It's a matter of how you get it off the ground and get people motivated to begin to implement it. I think you're going to have trouble with the higher up guys like the governors and those people. They're so used to all that noise up there, they throw everything in the round file. We have to figure out how to grab them in such a way. Of course, timing is everything too, depending on what's going on. You know what I mean?
To be elected, to any public servant, to anybody that's an elected representative of any capacity, they would be able to take the course for free. The only ones that need to pay for it are the people that are not elected representatives.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
whether they take it or not is really irrelevant. The purpose of the Secretaries of Education taking it was to implement it in their curriculum, in their state, in their public school system. That was the whole purpose of that.
But yeah, and if you get enough people pushing that and telling these elected representatives, listen, if you take this course and pass it, we will campaign to make sure that you get elected to help push this program through.
Well, that would be
a
quid pro quo. I mean, I don't know if we'd be willing to do that, because that would affect National Liberty Alliance, then it would affect our tax status, then we'd get involved with the IRS. No, we'd be open a can of worms with that one.
What I'm saying is it's the same as requiring your elected officials to know the Constitution. So how do you do that? Well, you go on, you take this course and prove that you went through it. And when the people, and what we'll do is we'll say, look, this guy took our Constitution course. We're certifying that they took the test, they took the course. And so this is a good guy to put in office. I don't think they can complain
about that. That would be something that has to be done on the Republican or the Democratic committees to take care of that at the county level, at the executive committees. That would fall on them. You'd have to get the national committee to accept it at the hierarchy and push it down, and we know that that's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
We got to do it outside of the political system. Once we get enough people taking this course, then they can introduce it in the public educational system. So it's not going
to... I think it's a hurdle to get it through the elected officials, because I think they have their own type of noise up there that we have to break through. And if it doesn't convert into votes or money, they don't understand. It doesn't compute. You know what I mean?
Well, we have access to all the executive committees in all the states. All that information, public information at the state level, and who the executive committees are. I mean, we can target these people.
Well,
anything's possible with technology we got today. But it's just an educational challenge. 2020. It just sounded good. You know, it just sounds good. It just sounds like a viable thing to do, because NLA is certainly not getting the job done at the rate that we're going. So we got to do something, and I think a national educational challenge campaign would be a good thing to do it.
Well, that's
and
part
give
of
them
what
silver
we have.
Coin, so they get something at the end, you know.
Right.
We had the money; we could make it a gold coin.
Yeah, right. That's phase two. But anyway, we should continue the discussion. It sounds like a good idea if we can get it off the ground, and what's the best way to begin to push those ideas out there. You know,
if anybody wants to contact me, they can contact me through email at wbs1630@gmail.com.
WBS at 1630?
No, WBS 1630.
Oh, WBS1630@gmail.com. Okay.
That was the year my ancestors came here to the United States.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
So if you go in and you listen to the recording and you come to this, you know, the first hour, that's where you'll get the information to get a hold of Winthrop. So thank you, and let's keep the discussion going. And I would, I mean, it came out of that Thursday night meeting, so people need to jump in there to see what's going on and bring their ideas.
It came out.
You
know? It came out in the last minute. It came out in the last minute of the meeting 2 weeks ago.
So next week you could spend an hour. See what happens.
Well, last week you got tied up and an hour went really quick.
Right. Well, time flies when you have fun, especially if you're accomplishing something, you know, there's never enough time. But thanks for your comments and your ideas, and we'll keep it going, come back in next Monday and we'll see what kind of progress we make. So now everybody was presented. Let's see if people will step up now and push it and see and come up with some ideas on how to implement the plan. Anyway, thank you very much. Okay. We'll go to the next. Yeah, you too. God bless. We've got North Carolina April coming up now.
Hey, how you doing, Gerard?
Good. How's it going, April?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. I had a question about something you said earlier.
Okay.
In contract law, if you sign a contract under duress, isn't it null and void?
That's right. But, you know,
so if you're getting a license because you were told you have to get a license, that's under duress, isn't it?
In a manner of speaking, it is. But, you know, the fact is you're supposed to know what you're signing. So, you know, it's under, look, you didn't have full consent is what it is. It's not necessarily even under duress. People go in skipping and jumping to get their license. They think it's a great thing.
Yeah.
And if you listen to that video that I told you, there are certain steps that you take that implement this thing, and you don't even realize that you are creating a trust, and by registering the car, that's what completes them having ownership of it.
Yeah, but you're also doing that under duress because, I'll give you an example. I have a son that has a car. He doesn't want to register. He doesn't want to get his license back. He just wants to drive the car. But if he does that, they'll arrest him.
Absolutely.
So it is under duress.
Yeah, because you're doing it because you don't have time to fight with them, you know, as far as getting
pulled
over.
You're being forced to because you can't fight with them. You don't have the time. You don't have the money.
Well, there are people that have gotten the state to give them to admit they had ownership of the car because they ran an ad in the newspaper and they went through a legal process, and the state recognized that process. But that doesn't stop you from, you know, they give a letter to the driver, but that doesn't mean the officer is going to know understand that letter and that he's not going to handcuff you and pull you in. As a matter of fact, there was a couple, I think their name was, I think it was Brad Barnhill and his wife. They did a lot of UCC stuff.
Right.
And they were in court every week. They used to get pulled out and beat up, and then they would file papers. They made their living going around suing these people that violated their rights after the fact.
Right.
You know? But that, they go from one town to the next. The minute they were in the next town, you know, if they stayed in the town where they won the case, they would have been fine.
Yeah.
Because all the local police officers and the judges, they told them, don't pull these people in. We don't want them. They're trouble. You know?
Right. But they went around other places.
Yeah, I think they went around looking for trouble because they were very good with the UCC and they knew how to use it. And, you know, I mean, their married life, half the time they were apart because either she was in jail or he was in jail, you know? And then when you have kids, that makes it even harder because you got to make sure you both don't end up in jail at the same time because you lose your kids that way, right?
Yeah.
And most of the stuff they did was traffic, too.
Wow.
You know.
Yeah.
Because traffic, you know, you can always bail by paying the money, usually.
I just thought it was interesting when you were saying that you're signing your contract with them. And then all I kept thinking is contract law. If you're doing it under duress and if they're threatening that if you don't get your license and you don't register your car, you're going to go to jail. You cannot drive your car around without it being licensed or registered. And that's under duress.
That's right. Now, how do you hold your rights if you're going to do those things?
Yeah.
You know, there are people that are driving around that they leave alone. There is such a thing as a diplomatic immunity, and the police know all about that. And there's other people that you know, there's certain ways of signing things where you retain your rights.
Yeah.
By the way you sign the paperwork, and the more you educate yourself, the more you open them doors up, because what happens is, you know, at some point you're able to enforce the law in the lower courts as you get better and better, where you don't always end up in the Supreme Court, you know?
Yeah.
That
was the other thing I wanted to tell you about. I was reading something where there was a clerk of the court that came forward. They wouldn't give her name, but she came forward and stated there's a lot of people in Virginia that the judges did not sign off on their convictions, and so their convictions are null and void, and they're urging everybody to go to the clerk of the court and find out if the judge signed off and also if he took an oath, because if he didn't take an oath, then it's null and void also.
Right.
So I wanted to mention that for anybody who's listening that has somebody locked up in Virginia or any other state if it has the same rules.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Why just Virginia?
Yeah. I thought that was a really good one. I didn't know that, and I'm going to be looking into that myself.
Right.
So I thought I'd pass the info.
Well, thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. All right, I'm going to bow out. Thank you very much, and y'all have a Merry Christmas.
You too. And we won't see each other until after New Year's at this point.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Yeah, have a blessed. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, we have Linda from Virginia. How are you doing, Linda?
Good. She's just going
to... Say that again.
Can
you were
hear
coming
me?
In kind of... You're a little low, a little muffled.
Can you hear me now?
Mic? That's much better.
Okay. All right. Well, I've been a little inactive because I've been busy trying to finish, you know, what I'm working on. I have the code enforcement case.
Mm-hmm.
And
I remember.
Good news. I just passed my concealment inspection, which was the big one.
Okay.
I have the final left, but that's just... there's not a lot to it. It's soffits and, you know, a little bit of siding and connecting the electrical to the box.
Right.
But, you know, I was finishing the work, including the trusses that were busted up by a trespasser, you know, on my property. And that was interesting, but I'll leave that out of this. But indirectly, through NLA, I ended up meeting with the district supervisor and the city engineer when I could not get resolution with the trust issue.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then there was the labor shortage and the issue with county approval and all that. And that, by the way, came full circle. I had asked a year ago for approval of the standard manufacturer repair drawings to repair the trusses and was told no by both the code enforcer and his boss. And so then they told me I had to have an engineer, and then I looked for many months for an engineer, and two engineers basically told me, you're not going to find anyone. And I would go to the hearings and tell them this, and it was all being treated with disregard until I went and met with the district supervisor. And I told him everything. And, you know, he said they work for me. And after that, everything changed. You know, I wasn't being hauled into court as frequently and all that. So, here's my issue.
Just goes to show.
I'm sorry?
Just goes to show when it's who you know. You know, you get a little bit of, you get more flies with honey with vinegar. You get the right guy on your side, and a lot of your troubles can go away.
Yes, but that's part of the issue is average citizens do not have this kind of knowledge, you know, and they don't even have on their website like basic contact information, you know, some kind of what do you call that when there's a chart of the hierarchy of the government, the people, whatever.
They'd have to actually work harder then. if they're easy to get a hold of, people will call them and ask questions, and that's what they don't want.
Yeah, but the disclosure to the public is deplorable. They don't have basic contact information. They don't have appeal, like due process information, and all that. So you know, I'm just saying, when I started into this, I didn't know who was in what position or who to contact. And, of course, over a period, I've, you know, found out. But, you know, it's just, you really don't know what to do. So, but I got advice, and, you know, I did do that. So, and like I said, after that, everything changed. But, so, you know, they had filed the case, and I had appealed it. And everything I brought up was treated with disregard. And then, and what happened was, do you still hear me?
Yeah.
Hello? Okay. the judge says that he was retiring. And the chief judge had told him to clear his calendar. This is what he said in court. So he found me guilty, and he ended the case. And then...
that's a good excuse to end the case, huh? Is that you just guilty as charged. I'm clearing my calendar.
Oh, it was, I didn't know what to say, really. And you know, it's like I didn't know where I stood, really. But then within a month, they filed a new case alleging the exact same, you know, things as the first case. So about that time is when I met with the supervisor and things started to change. And so
they might have goofed up doing that, because that showed them being vindictive to file another case. Exactly, like it's almost like double jeopardy in a certain sense.
Oh,
right?
And now it's so confusing, because if I appeal it, am I just appealing the new case, or, you know, I'm thinking I need to file something and that requests to combine the cases. But that's another issue.
Don't they call that something like collateral estoppel? I mean, once a case has been tried already, they've tried to do that to us at NLA.
Yeah, double jeopardy.
Tell us they've already heard the case and we can't run it again. But that's what they're doing to you. They filed another case on the same subject. Right?
Well, they keep saying that I'm under this abatement thing to abate the work. And I've looked, and there's not very much out there on abatement. And that's the reason they kept giving me for this continuing, ongoing thing. Because I was wondering myself, how do they get around? Where's my speedy trial thing? You know, this has been going on for years.
They're basing it on your performance. And what they're saying is you didn't perform as according to. So they found you guilty, but did you fix the problem? That's where they're going, right?
Well, what I find is they are following court timelines. Like you get three continuances and you can't have any more than three. But it doesn't fit the projects that they're, you know, that they are managing, I guess, or trying to manage. And, well, to go back, I had no due process. There was never any administrative hearing, never an administrative process, nothing, you know.
Right.
They just hauled off and charged me. And so within a month, they file this new case. And, you know, like I said, I just did this inspection just in time for the court hearing. And it's been my third, you know, I remember in earlier hearings talking about the shortage of labor, because we have a severe shortage of labor, especially with professional work, like carpenters and...
Yeah.
You cannot get them. The companies might be able to get them, but they're just non-existent, really. They're not going to come and work for my little homeowner project, is what it comes down to, you know. They're going to go work for a company where they get benefits and higher pay.
Right.
So anyway, I go to the hearing. I do the inspection the day before. I pass the inspection. Court is the next day. I go to court, and I'm all prepared with my copy of my past inspection and everything. The prosecutor gets up. I mean, no, I'm sorry. The county rep. And the surprising thing is the inspector that had charged me had always been the one to show up in court. He was always there.
Right.
Well, this day it was a different person. And they were talking, there were two cases. He said he had three building cases, and there were two before me, something about a church. And he said the person that had this case was no longer with the county. So right away I was thinking, I wonder if that's the same inspector, you know, that I had. Because like I said, he has always been there for all the cases. Huh. Only him. So anyway, they call my name, and the county rep says, Your Honor, we're going to null process. And I was surprised, you know. And I left there thinking, I left there was happy because it was thrown out, but it was short-lived because I remembered back to the last time where the case was ended, and then they filed a new case. And also, the judge that had retired was the judge. So I guess
in the new case, yeah,
yes.
maybe. Who knows?
Yes.
No, he could be retired, and he's just filling in part time or something. And he's showing up as a administrative, you know, official, and he's not really a judge then, you know, like
I think
most courts run it like that.
because I did look it up, and he did retire. They had a ceremony for him, so he did retire, and so that must be the case, you know. And I'm not wild about retired judges because I feel like they don't have as much to lose, and I don't know. I just feel like there's more abuse with them, you know, because I don't know. That's my feeling about it. But anyway.
Because they don't have the authority. They don't have any skin in the game, so to speak. They're just a hired gun.
Yeah, it's not like a judge that's just starting early on, you know, starting out, and he can't afford to lose his law mm-hmm. license or something, you know.
Right.
I don't know. I just feel like they're not as accountable or something. So, but so now I'm here thinking they're probably going to file a new case shortly. And I'm like, how is this possible that they can just keep for years and years, keep going with filing new cases over and over for whatever reason comes their way? A judge retires, the guy's no, you know, the man's no longer with the county. I mean, I'm just speculating that it might be the same person. I don't know, but so. So I'm seriously thinking about is it possible to appeal a null pros, not a case that's null pros has, you know, and been entered as null pros case?
I think you can appeal anything. I think you could come in at any time, you know, especially if you didn't get due process. You know, John will tell you can get out of that court, go into the federal court if you have to.
What I'm thinking is go to the higher state court for now, and then
crack at it. Yeah, you take it to the higher state court.
Yeah, if something doesn't happen. You know, I personally have a real problem with federal court, and that's you go in there and they charge you $400 to file a case, and so it's like you're just paying into the whole money laundering process, you know.
Absolutely. We always try to go in without paying the money, you know, and we always threaten them that we're going to sue for the money back, and we haven't received it back yet. You know, we've only been there a couple times, but we always put that paper in saying that we should have it for nothing, that they should not be able to charge for justice, you know.
And I believe that renders the trial, that actually creates the money laundering situation, you know, where the trial courts have more of an incentive just to be pass-throughs, you know, like just rule against every case and send you on to federal court where you have to pay $400 to start with to file the case, and then the filings are exorbitant, you know, everything you file has a fee and everything to it. So, I don't know. It's just, personally, I just have a problem with contributing to that whole.
Yeah, that's, you know, we've been trying to get into the federal court without paying because by saying we're there for due process and we didn't, in other words, the entity brought us there. We didn't bring ourselves there. So because they're misbehaving and we have to go to the federal court, we should not have to pay for that.
Right. This is insane.
There's an action against us, basically. So we're there because of that action, because of their mishandling of that action. But, you know, so far we haven't, that argument hasn't stood. That's something that's one of the things we're working on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they're charging this money and extorting this money for justice, which they shouldn't be able to do. You know, you're going into that federal court asking them to correct the lower court. Why do we got to pay for that? They should pay us for having to go up there and ask them to do that. You know what I mean?
Or you should at least get your money back, you know, when you prevail or something.
Right. Well, a lot of times, you do anyway on a case because you go for legal fees. And obviously, that's a legal fee, isn't it?
Yeah. But I think it falls under the excessive fines and fees, you know, thing.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, and so that's that thing is the new case situation. And on the other hand, if they don't file a new case, I guess as long as I go ahead and get the final that it's, you know, it's done for now, except that I still have. The thing that makes me compelled to want to go forward is I still have the criminal charge for adding on, for improving my house.
Yeah, that's kind of weird too, isn't it?
In Virginia especially, because you cannot get, from what everything I've read, you cannot get them expunged. They are not, you know, they're
really
not something you can expunge. Yeah, so you're
so
stuck.
That's more of a reason to fight, kicking and screaming, though.
Well, exactly, to clear, you know, to clear that,
you know,
and
why
that,
in the first place.
That would even, I mean, I own my home and everything, but that would even keep me out of a trailer park. You know, a criminal
absolutely
charge.
Absolutely, anything like that. Yep, and they know that. They certainly do.
Or out of a job, you know, or from what I've read, it always says it may. The funny part is there's five classes of misdemeanors in Virginia. No, four. Everything you always read says there's four classes of misdemeanors. And this falls under what's called unclassified. So everything you always read says, like on a background check or something, it may come up, you know.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So you don't know whether it does or whether it doesn't. And, you know, anyway. And then the second thing, the new case thing was the first thing I wanted to talk about. And then the second thing is I was wondering, for jurisdiction, the permit was issued for a reason I don't know to a very large contractor, Beezer Homes. And I've never had, you know, I've never had anything to do with Beezer Homes, but that's the way the permit was issued. And I brought it up. Actually, my name was nowhere on there. And then finally, in this case, they put my name on there as the owner. But it's still, I've asked them to change it, and it is still showing, you know, this contract, this big home builder. And the notices were going to this big home builder. I've got a copy of a letter that was sent to them, but I never got any of the notices. And that's part of the problem with this whole case. Like, you know, this is due or that's due. I never got any of those. So I was wondering, jurisdiction-wise, how does this court have jurisdiction over me if the permit is not under, you know, doesn't have me as the, you know, it had the contractor as the permit holder.
Well, so I don't know that, contractors can apply for permits, but I don't know that they can be the permit holder, because that's supposed to be the one that owns the property, who has that fiduciary responsibility. So I don't know how a contractor, I know they do it, they list them as the permit holder, because a lot of contractors as a service will apply for and get you the permit. But you
they
know they're
can
doing
absolutely
it.
Apply for the permit. In fact, I've been in there when they've heard other cases, and it's been a contractor who pulled the permit and didn't do the work right.
Mm-hmm.
And so they definitely go after them. and make them correct.
If I could get a contractor to pull a permit for me, I would do that rather than get my own permit any day of the week. You know, because it gives you a level of protection, so to speak. You know,
I was just tossing around if I could challenge jurisdiction on that, because
you might. I don't know that much about it, but you know, it's something you can bring up because, you know, where does that actually lay? It seems like a gray area to me.
Yeah, I would think they'd have to have a contract or something. And that's another thing. They have never filed any document at all in this entire case. None. And I was wondering, maybe that's why they haven't filed anything, because they really don't have, I suspect that they have a system where it can't be changed once it's issued, because I have asked numerous times, you know, for that to be taken off of there, and it still, to this day, is on there. And so
I don't know how that works.
But anyway,
works, you know?
I would think...
You know what you're going to find? You're going to find that you get stymied sometimes because you run into an area where they don't even know. You know what I mean?
I think that's the case.
You're
yeah.
causing problems that they're not used to and they don't have answers to. And sometimes sometimes they stick their foot in a hornet's nest and then they don't know how to get out of it.
That's been the problem all along, this whole abatement thing and, you know, how it's handled. And there's...
Well, the only thing you can do is try to get sharper than them, you know what I mean, as far as that goes. But, you know, there's just so many... Look, we know what they're doing. They just ignore the law when push comes to shove, you know. And they're very good at getting away with that.
What's going to happen is I have to decide. I have 10 days to appeal. That's Monday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting here thinking they're going to file a new case, just like they did before. And in order to, you know, keep that from happening or at least delay it, is I don't think I have any choice but to file to appeal, you know, this case.
Well, either that or you got to find yourself an opportunity to enter a paper in to get and prepare it for the judge to sign, where they sign off of the case and they do it with prejudice so they can't come back. That's what you need. You need closure. And you got to get the judge to sign the thing, and you're going to have to prepare that order. That's to be maybe an order. The judge isn't making orders. They don't like to make orders. They like everything in limbo. They don't want to be responsible for anything.
Well, I already have the answer for that, and at the same time I file the notice of appeal, I'm going to file a motion to combine the cases. And that, you know, that's the old case.
And you shouldn't do that.
Case.
They've done that to us. They've combined our cases.
I don't think they can refuse it. And now I have read cases where it was requested after the trial, and they didn't allow it because you're supposed to request it before the trial.
Well,
but in this case,
to do that, it can't hurt. What the heck? You make the motion and see what happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and once I request to combine cases, he either has to approve it or not. And if he approves it, well, the last case was null pros, so how does that, you know, work out?
I don't know, but as you go along, you should always be prepared, have a paper with you for the judge to sign if the opportunity presents itself, and say, well, I have an order right here for you to sign, Your Honor. Sometimes you can get them off kilter like that, you know what I mean? And they'll sign it. And that's what you want to work towards. You want to work towards closure on this thing. And look, you might get the judge into a certain area where she wants you out of there. They may sign your paper just to get rid of you, you know, especially if you have the order prepared. And you can walk up to the bench and say, look, I want to submit this motion or this order for the judge to sign. And the judge, look, you put it up there, the judge can either do it or not do it, you know. They usually won't do it right away in front of you. They'll say, I'll let you know my decision, you know, in a week or something like that. That's how what they usually do, you know.
But this would involve, this is one of the nicest, I don't know if you want to say nicest, but, well, I'll just say nicest for now. He is one of the nicest judges there. He'll like.
Yeah, so you just do it respectfully. That's all. I'm not telling you to do anything disrespectful. What I'm saying is you're giving him something to hang his hat on. And if you have that motion or that order written up ahead of time so that you're not fiddling and fuddling and fubbing and you hand it to him, you can impress him with your footwork. And sometimes they'll sign it and he'll let you go because you did your homework.
I just have a feeling because he's already found me guilty in the first case, I just have a feeling that he's going to balk at combining cases because, you know, how can you find me guilty in one case and null prosit in the new case?
Yeah, that's a good,
and it's
I don't
all
know.
The same, it's all the same case. That will be my argument if I have to go forward, you know. So
that's kind of your strategy is to make them uncomfortable, basically, and bring these things up that nobody else wants to bring up. Look, you just want to you become a burr under their saddle, and eventually they'll want you out of there, and they'll give you redress of your grievance just to get rid of you, if nothing else. You know what I'm saying? Because you keep coming back with stuff, and they don't want to keep bothering with you. Believe me, I don't believe that they do. You know,
especially as long as I'm not paying $400 to file a case.
Yeah, right. Well, I don't know. You gotta try these things, and whatever you can do for free, that's what I would try first. You know.
Well, that's my thinking is.
Yeah.
And you also, you know, you're able to. It's like trial and error. You're able to. Learn from it, you know.
Yeah. Well,
and the other thing I was tossing around was a bar complaint, just over the whole thing, you know. My view is this never should have happened. It's, you know, abuse of power, and I know I've went to the hearings and said there's never been a hearing. There was no administrative process. There's no due process, you know, and.
Yeah, and that's why it sounds like a federal case. But, you know, I don't know if you're going to get them to give you redress in that court since they've already made decisions that they can't, they don't feel they can back away from, maybe. I don't know. You know, you're going to have to get them in a horn dilemma or you're going to have to take it out of their court, one or the other. But look, we've been 30 minutes on this, so I mean, it's
okay.
All very interesting, but I want to get some other people
all right.
in here.
Okay, good. Well, thank you for listening to me.
I could talk to you about it all night long.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Okay,
thanks
all right. Thank you.
We'll
all
see
right.
you next week. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Okay, all right. Bye.
California Fred, where have you been?
Oh, I've been around lurking, listening, and taking notes.
Yes, you have. What's going on, Fred, this evening?
Just a few comments, but I don't know if this is legitimate. Are we going to have a Thursday night this week or no?
You know, that's a good question. I would imagine yes. Who runs the Thursday night? Is that
I am running it, and yes, we will have it.
Okay, so
okay.
That was my guess, and I was right, so...
Well, great. Well, Gerard, it's great to talk to you again. I'm sorry about John. I've been praying for him. But I would like to make two comments.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, first off, it's a concern. See, we're the National Liberty Alliance. We're the grand jury. Right?
Correct.
Okay. Now, don't they have something that you can't tax a right?
Absolutely. We would have
right.
the argument.
Well, Now, listen, just follow my train of thought for a sec, okay? If we can't tax a right and we have a right to a redress of grievance, they can't charge us a court fee. The same thing with a Seventh Amendment trial by a jury over $20 or more.
Look, the trouble is they're not giving us a constitutional court
I understand that, but nobody's calling them on those issues.
And they're calling it a civil case when you go in there.
That's because they're operating under the civil rules of procedure.
Exactly.
That's where you have to go in and break them up. You got to use that cue ball to break up that rack. You got to sink the eight ball in the break, pal.
You know, the other thing that we've fallen down on, Fred, while you're at it, is, you know, we go into these cases and they call us names and they call us sovereign citizens, but we never bring up really and push as hard as I think we need to that U.S. versus Williams, where he says, look, you can't tell the grand jury what to do or how to assemble. They don't, the courts don't have control over, they operate outside the courts. Why aren't we pushing Scalia's words? He made them for us. They're not our words. They're his words.
All right. You bring up an interesting point. Okay. They call us sovereign citizens. Okay. You're looking at a jurist, a judge. Now, for my opinion, most of these judges couldn't hack it as a lawyer, and that's why they're dining from the public trough in a black cape.
Well, isn't that what Scalia said?
Well, check it out.
You almost directly quoted him, I think.
Well, anyway.
He did complain that more and more judges have no trial experience. That was one of his complaints. He said
the
public trough.
Sir, when they call you a sovereign citizen, ask him to define those terms from the legal dictionary that he's quoting it from.
Well, I think it's a lawsuit when they call us sovereign citizens because they're giving us a label. They're discriminating against us. I don't know what that club is or how you would join it. Apparently they're the only ones that can put you in that club.
Well, in a courtroom, you're dealing with facts, not opinion.
Yeah, and what kind of fact is that? That because they had somebody that called themselves sovereign citizens that shot a cop? We don't even know what that organization is or if there isn't even an organization. You know, they had some freemen in Utah that came in and made some statements. Look, this is the Southern Poverty Law Center that they're basing off like they're some kind of experts when they're in fact nobody.
Well,
they have no authority.
They're a George Soros group.
Exactly.
Okay, now about the WBS 1630 guy.
Yes.
Okay, he was out earlier. That was his email.
Yep.
Okay, I got this for him. Okay, he wants to know how you can enact this stuff. Well, Gerard, I have some timers, so bear with me, pal.
Right. I'm right there with you.
Who was it that said, the proper recourse is to teach them if they don't know the common law? Who was that?
That was Jefferson, I believe.
Oh, yeah, Jefferson, right. So those words right there give you the grounds to use that to bring in a lawsuit against the Department of Education because they are not teaching civics. They're not teaching common law. They're not teaching the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Paper. They're not taking you down that little primrose lane where you do the constitutional theory.
Hey, Fred, do you go on the Thursday night call?
No, I prefer the Monday.
Yeah, but we need you on Thursday. Listen to your suggestions. I like it.
Yeah, well, what
maybe
I'm getting at...
Maybe you should sneak in on the Thursday night call and just contribute that. I mean, you contribute what you can. And I'm not saying that you got to spend a whole bunch of time, but we need this dialogue between all these good minds so that we can bring something to fruition here. You know what I mean? As far as many minds working together.
Right. Well, Well, anyway, back to what I was...
good talent. I mean, look, I like what you're saying, and I think that that's a very good point. But go ahead.
What I'm getting at is this Department of Education, if you read your 10th Amendment, they've got no place in earth to have an education or accredit what you should know or shouldn't know. But since they purport to do that, I think we need to sue them into submitting submission. Bring it to where they have to have they have to teach the common law. They have to teach the Constitution. They have to teach cursive so a person can understand and read the Constitution.
And you know what? They've cut that out of the here. They're not teaching cursive.
That's why I'm bringing it up.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they're taking money.
Who was going to get rid of the Department of Education? That was Ronald Reagan. Wasn't he the one that was saying, wow, we're going to do away with Department of Education? They were all horrified, remember?
Yeah, then he expanded it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, he got shot, too. Remember Hinckley?
Yeah, I do. They reeled him right back in. They reeled Ronnie back in.
Yeah, the deep state got to him. Well, they haven't got to Trump yet, although they've tried to kill him, I think, about 5 times.
Yeah, you'll never hear about it on the news, though, but nevertheless.
Anyway, so those were the points I wanted to bring up, is that I believe that as the National Liberty Alliance, we can make an information and send it to the Board of Education and sue them for noncompliance with the Constitution.
I think that, if I'm not mistaken, I think there are state laws in different states that say that they're supposed to teach the Constitution. New York State, I know, has laws that say that they're supposed to, what they're supposed to teach in history as far as the Constitution goes. And they're not following the state law on that. So
well, my point is federal funding coming from the federal government to the Department of Education. And I've worked in the school system, and I can tell you this, that the school agencies, I don't know what you would call them, they're nothing but a big, giant conglomerate. These people don't teach children. They spend all of their time trying to comply with the Board of Education's requirements for accreditation.
Really?
And they decide what books they're going to teach. And they try to stay current with Supreme Court cases where you don't teach religion in school, you can't take your Bible, you can't wear shirts like that say something that they don't like. Well, what I'm getting at is they're violating our Second Amendment 6 ways to Sunday in schools. And
our Second Amendment?
Our First Amendment, our Second Amendment, our Fourth Amendment, all of them. The 10th Amendment.
You know, when I was a kid in high school and I had wood shop and I had this 20-gauge Steven shotgun that the front stock cracked. I wrapped that gun in a blanket, got on the school bus with it, got off in homeroom, walked through the school, put it in my locker. Third period, I opened it up, walked down the hall, walked into wood shop with it assembled, okay? Put it in wood shop, then we made a stock and all this other stuff, and I took it home. Nobody thought anything of it.
Gerard, I'm 70 years old. When I was in elementary school and junior high, it was in California. We didn't have guns here, but we moved to Utah for a year. And the kids all did the same thing. They would take in their 22s and shotguns, and they'd refinish their stocks. They would take their guns apart and do all kinds of stuff, add scopes. And they'd actually take them out, and they had a firing range where they could shoot them.
Sounds like heaven, don't it?
Well, the NRA used to have the junior NRA where kids would compete. I'm talking about 12-year-old kids competing and shooting. And they weren't shooting BB guns, buddy.
No, that's what everybody, that's why they got all upset with Mel Gibson's movie there where he tells the little kid, aim small, miss small. He had the 13-year-old shooting the British shoulders, remember?
Yep.
Well, that's the way it was.
Well, I've got no room for liberals in my life. I think they're pretty much useless eaters.
Sounds like a good title for a book.
Well, I was on submarines.
No room for liberals.
When I was on subs, in boot camp, they taught us the M1 and the 45 cal pistol. When I got on the sub, I also got to learn about the 45 Thompson and the M2 50 cal air-cooled.
Mm.
So those are the weapons I was good at.
And those are the weapons that you're still supposed to be able to practice with as a militia.
Well, you'd think so.
Yeah. And for some reason, they're very terrified of the 50 cal.
Of course they are. With a Barrett 50 cal, you can reach out and really take somebody out at a mile or two away.
Yeah, I understand that, but where do you ever get a mile or two shot anyplace? I tell you what, most of the time things are done up close and personal. I mean, I don't know. I mean, over here in New York, there's hardly a place you can shoot for a half a mile before you're running into a mountaintop or a tree. You know.
Well, with a Barrett 50 cal, if you were in a building, you'd pretty much be able to control the whole street.
Well, that's what happened at that college campus there, remember?
In Texas.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm not advocating that someone go out and buy a 50 cal. I'm simply stating that that's probably why they fear it, because of the range.
And well, I think you can do as much damage with a 308 or a 30-06. I mean, really, was that range that he was using any greater than that? I don't think so.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, you hear all this BS about the AR-15. I'll tell you what, that or any other kind of, you give me an M14, baby, and I'll put them all down.
Right.
You know what an M14 is, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the reason they took the M14 out of service, it was a damn good rifle. You shoot somebody with that, he's dying.
Yeah, well.
And then they brought in the M16, a plastic piece of junk that was jamming as if you get it dirty, and people were dying because they couldn't get it to operate.
Right.
223 round, you know, it's designed, it goes in on a finger, it comes out on your temple or something. It's designed to wound you and tear you up, so they got to cart somebody off. It wasn't a weapon of war. It was a toy.
Well, isn't that the strategy of war in the Geneva Convention? Not to kill, but to wound them and slow them down and wear them down. That's why they don't let you use hollow point ammunition, right? Supposedly.
Well, the police use that crud on us.
No, but I'm talking about for war, because the idea with war is you wound a guy and it takes two guys to carry him. That's the theory anyway. And I'll tell you, one of the most feared rounds out there is the .22, because it's cheap, it's light, it's quiet, and it does horrible damage. Horrible, horrible damage. I would never want to get shot with a .22. You never know what it's going to do.
Well, yeah, if you look at a long rifle .22, that's one of the weapons the OSS used at the end of World War II to wipe out all the Nazis in the SS. Take them out in the country and blast them in the head one time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, .22 is a pretty good weapon.
Yeah, it's very accurate, very flat shooting. And you can make it quiet, too. So.
Yeah, you can.
So,
yeah,
anyway.
You can take a Coke bottle up to your muzzle, and that round coming out, it's going to be real quiet. The next one won't be.
Right.
But you want accuracy, use a Thompson Contender.
Well,
single shot break action pistol, most accurate handgun in the world.
So you should be doing our gun class, Fred, anyway. But,
nah.
But I like your suggestions on what you said earlier. That's, you need to expand upon that more and maybe bring it into that Thursday class to get some movement there. Because I think, you know, I think between what you said what the other fella said there, and get those ideas percolating, maybe we can move something through the Department of Education. I mean, if it has to be a law, I think a lawsuit gets their attention a lot quicker, you know what I mean?
Well, that's what I was getting at, is as a National Liberty Alliance grand jury, we can make the point that they're violating the Constitution and their accredited learning is all unconstitutional, because they're supposed to teach the Constitution, the common law cursive, and they're supposed to teach the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers, and they should have the Blackstone commentaries in there as well, so you can understand common law.
Right. Well, I think we need to get that down on paper somehow and start to move it, you know?
Right. But, well, that should be some kind of an information we vote on in National Liberty Alliance to present that paperwork and cram it home on a separate deal.
Well, and you know what? The thing is we need other people that can write besides John, because John is just like overwhelmed. So, I mean, this is not that hard to write. I mean, to put those ideas down and get them, and then if we work on them as a group, we'll edit them together. I mean, my goodness, John writes stuff and he runs it past Jan. It goes back and forth six times before it gets its final. You know, we could do the same thing.
You got to dot every I, cross every T, do it exactly perfect. And you've got to use the words that will trigger the effect you want, because like you were telling that lady before, you know, you have to write the decision for the judge, so all he has to do is sign it.
Right. Catch him in that moment. It does. It works, you know.
It's all a procedural. It's a can of worms, because they don't want to go to the common law. They don't want to use the Constitution. They'll do anything they can to avoid it.
Absolutely, and they're taught that. They're taught that all the time. What do you think they have those SMA, State Magistrate Association classes to keep these guys brushed up on how to keep that stuff out of the courts?
Well,
that's what they're doing.
The simple fact there is, do a Freedom of Information Act on what they're teaching, and then sue them for noncompliance with the Constitution.
Right.
They're subverting the Constitution.
I think it's a great idea. That, and I think we also need to push Scalia's decision to the forefront with these guys that think that we don't have the authority or whatever. Because that's Scalia gave us our driver's license right there when
he
wrote that case.
And I've made this point before. I told you that Bill and Janet Reno wrote the grand jury instructions, and that violates the separate but equals.
Imagine, I couldn't think of two worse people to write that thing, but that's beside the point.
Well, you know, he had to usher in NAFTA and GATT to change the tax code so everybody would relocate their business outside the country, so he had to take away the power of the grand jury.
Right.
And that's what they did. And that was also back during the time when they were dealing with David Koresh and... And they were burning those people out in Texas.
Yeah. We've had a lot of bad things go down the pike in the past years, and we were shell shocked and sat there and took it. We should have been in the streets over that kind of stuff, because, you know, today Derek Koresh, tomorrow it's your kids, you know.
Well, yeah, it's like the Bundys, or it's like the Weavers,
yeah.
or It's all of it.
That's right.
I mean, I'm so, well, Lavoie Finnegan, I mean, there's another guy that, you know.
Yep.
When I see what's going on with this Mueller is the biggest piece of, well, all I can say is he's a traitor.
Yeah, I think so, too. People say, oh, he's working undercover for
nah.
Trump. I don't believe that
I'll
at all.
I'll tell you what about when
look at he's done some bad things in his past as far as facilitating even the Uranium One and all that stuff. This guy's into it deep.
Yeah, he is. But you know, when Q says these boards are the only place you need to be, I've got to question that because anytime somebody says, I am the only way to the kingdom of heaven, I got to say, wait a minute.
Yeah, well.
You can get six preachers and they all think they've got the magic key, like John keeps saying, you know, click your heels and somehow you're going to get there.
Right.
I don't buy it for a minute. Now, I do respect Q and his insight, and yeah, maybe he is part of the NSA, and maybe he knows what's going on that we don't have privy to, but that's our fault.
Yep.
We shouldn't have anything top secret above the oversight of the people.
Yeah, well, more harm has been done in the name of national security in the past, you know, few years especially. They really lean heavily on that. You know, it's just a piss-poor excuse. I'm sorry.
Well, I can understand they wouldn't want people to know how to make a hand grenade or a bomb or, you know, make their own ammunition or something.
Well, that's public knowledge. You're innocent until you're guilty. I mean, I mean, they can't ban books and they can't ban knowledge. I'm sorry, they just can't do it.
They're doing it, Gerard, right now.
It's not good.
As we speak, they're doing it.
Yeah.
Have you noticed there's a lot of books that are going online, and when they go online, they can edit them.
Right.
And how many times have you heard about the original 13th Amendment and pages being ripped out of law books in libraries?
Yeah, experienced it myself. But anyway.
Okay, well, they're burning books right now as we speak. Yeah, you better get somebody else in here. I'll think about Thursday. What time is it?
Terry, what time is Thursday? Is it at 7? I think it's 7.
Yeah, I'm trying to get to the unmute key. Sorry for it takes long. Yes, it's at 7 o'clock. That's correct.
Right.
7 so Eastern 7, time.
Yeah. Eastern. Okay. Okay. Thank you. Thank
or no, wait. 9 o'clock Eastern time, 7 Mountain time. I usually have either at 7. My apologies.
Oh, okay. So 9 p.m. Eastern. 7
so it's 6 o'clock California time.
There you go.
Thank you very much for listening to me, Gerard. It was a pleasure talking to you guys again.
Yeah, you too, Fred. Okay, and we're looking forward to seeing you on Thursday. You can get some of them ideas in there and get the room percolating. Okay, have a good night, and Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, because I won't see you before then. Anyway, we're going to go to Daniel from Utah. Go ahead, Daniel, you're unmuted.
Okay, the guy was talking about the education system. And like you mentioned a moment ago, I don't know how effective it's going to be trying to appeal to the corporate system. Maybe we just need to eliminate the whole thing or bypass it. But years ago, I wrote up a list of basically common law rights, and the Constitution has some of them listed, and they're in the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. But I just made a list to simplify so people can understand you know, how natural rights work and, you know, the most important ones. And so I made a list, and I don't know if that'd be something good to post on the website so people could look at it. But, and I think one of the biggest.
I think it would be. Can you send it to Jan so we can look at it? Because that's,
yes.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yes, I can do that. It's just a few pages. You know, the rights are numbered and kind of explained and defined. So,
mm-hmm.
Also the biggest tool of education is actually currency. And if we start giving people credit within the, you know, the communities based on knowledge and allegiance to common law rights, then that gives people motivation to actually start upholding their rights and supporting, you know, the common rule of law.
Right.
And that yeah. should, you know, basically to be a part of this credit system, you got to be an adult, you got to be able to support yourself, you got to be able to, you know, read and write and, you know, be responsible. And part of that, the most important part of that education is knowledge of physical rights and how, you know, how rights work and what they're based on, and give allegiance to that. And then you can become a member and receive public credit for your allegiance to your neighbor's rights. And so that just creates the currency, and then it's supply and demand. And so I think that would be an effective system of actually encouraging people to start being honest about how rights and rule of law work, you know. And this written down in writing. With this written in writing.
People are going to have trouble getting their head around that because they've been so numbed. I'm going to say numbed down, not dumbed down, numbed down.
Correct. But if we have a simple list where they're not having to study every detail of the Constitution, but just understand the Ninth Amendment rights, natural rights, that's the thing they need to understand more than anything, because that is the common law. And so I think that would be beneficial in helping educate people to become grand juries to represent the common law rights. And, you know, it might need to be modified a little bit, you know, but yeah, I can. I guess Jan's email is on the website, right? And I can just send it to.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll do that.
Yeah, that'll be good. And look, we can get them. That's something that you don't even know how far it can reach in the hands of a child. You bring it into a class or to a school and put that in the hands of a kid, and you can.
Any homeschooler can make that part of the education.
Yeah, it's a seed. It's a seed that, you know, there are certain things that I still remember to this day that I got that were that powerful. You know what I mean? And that could be one of them,
yes.
Because it simplified the rights explained in a simplified way. And then as you get older, you know, you can delve deeper. But if you never heard it to begin with, then you'd have trouble getting your head around it if it's a foreign idea all your life, you know?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. They're lost forever from the start. They never got
right.
the right foundation. Yeah.
Right. So you make a nice, simple paper with the basic rights done in a simplified manner. That could be the seed, the mustard seed, so to speak, you know?
Yes.
So I think that's a good idea. And if you can get that over to Jan, that's something that we could incorporate into this other thing that we're talking about. And we can incorporate it right now on the site, like you said, just even to post it. You know, that way maybe other people will be able to pull it off and copy it and use it in their homeschooling and stuff.
Yeah, right. They can download it and share it with whoever they want through their emails and that kind of thing. So.
Yeah, now that my kids are all grown up and graduated, I'm not in it as much as I used to be. I have to get back in it. You know, when you have kids that you're educating that need education, it's a big incentive to do that stuff, you know? I mean, we had to write letters on different things, you know what I mean? We were always doing something, you know, babbling the school systems and working our way through it. So I'm kind of out of that for a while now, but I was heavily into it. And I know we have mostly probably older people, but anybody younger that has kids, very important to implement this stuff, you know,
Oh yeah. The sooner you start, the better world we're creating when they grow up.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you, Daniel. And if there's nothing
thank
else,
you
I'll
very
move
much.
On to Crystal. We okay. always love to see what's going on with Crystal. Hey, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year there, Daniel.
Thank you. You too.
Yeah. Crystal, we didn't put you to sleep, I hope. Are you there? Crystal. Come on, we waited for all this time for you, Crystal. Are you there? Are you muted or are you unmuted? She's unmuted. I don't hear her snoring. Crystal Mack. Well, we want to hear what your latest foray in the court was. What escapade did you go through this week? Well, you know what? I'm going to go to Jay from North Carolina. Crystal, I'm going to leave you open so that you can pipe in when you get back to the mic or whatever you need to do. And I haven't heard from North Carolina Jay in one heck of a long time.
I'm still kicking.
Oh, my goodness. It's good to hear your voice.
Hey,
you sound the same, so that's good.
I sent you a picture that I got off of Facebook. I sent it to your email.
Okay.
That needs to go up on our website.
All right, I'll check it out.
It's a cop pulling over a woman, and he says, "Do you know why I pulled you over?" She says, "Well, officer, a crime requires an injured party. Seeing that there isn't one, I can only assume that you're trying to manufacture my consent to a contract with the state's corporate policy in order to generate revenue in some kind of racketeering scam." That was on Facebook. I was like, yeah.
That's great. It's great that stuff's getting on Facebook. And I'll tell you what, if you can remember that and say it, you got one of two outcomes, a good one or a bad one.
I've actually been taking pictures of our Juris Handbook, of the handbook that we got. I've actually been taking pictures of quotes out of there and posting them to Facebook.
I'm surprised they don't ban you.
I'm surprised, too. I need a couple more of those if you guys have a couple sitting around.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. And you know,
I actually donated $100 for the sheriff's book, and I asked for a copy of that, and I asked for I did it online, and then it said add remarks, and I asked for a copy of that and a couple of copies of the other book if you had them. But I never heard nothing back, so.
I don't know where we're at with the sheriff's book. I don't. Did we ever even go to print with that latest one? I don't know.
I don't think we need to reprint that first one. I mean,
yes, we do. You're right. And there was updates.
Great.
You know, there's John's got so many irons in the fire. I don't know how he's going to get it all done. We need help because it's just you know, it's like a one man band hit because he's doing a lot of, you know, the writing. I mean, we're all going over it. You know, he sends it to different people, but we really need to get some other people that can write some of this stuff.
Well, I try to get on the call every week, but I'm here. I'm listening. I'm just not piping up.
So how are you feeling? You're doing. You sound great. I know you went through a rough time there, so it's good to hear you. It's good to have you back on the call.
Yeah, I'm still driving. I'm in North Carolina. I got to deliver tomorrow, and then heading home till after the first of the year. So.
So you're back in the truck. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Good.
I've been back in the truck for, 3 months after that bypass.
No kidding. Well, God bless you. You're a trooper. I can give you that. You know, hey, it's always fun having you come on and you tell us where you're at. as you're rolling down Highway 61 or whatever, right? the original rambling man here.
Well, I sent that to either Gerard, what is it for you, email. I lost everybody's contacts. I don't have anybody's phone numbers anymore, so.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you could send me an email back.
Yeah. What email did you send it for me? Did you send it to?
What is it?
Did you send it to Gerard at National Liberty Alliance, or did you send it to?
No, the other one.
The other one. Oh, my goodness. I'm having a senior moment.
Gerard, something for you or
Well, Fix It For You 22, but then there's Gerard 53. That's the other one. You probably sent it to my Fix It For You 22 at hotmail.com, right?
I'm not sure. I typed in your name and it came up, and I just tapped on it and sent it. So.
Yeah. Well, I'll check them all. I mean, I have my NLA one rolling into my personal one because it's the best way for me to get stuff. And I'm going to tell you.
You remember mine, right? Maybe you can send me an email off of that. I'm driving.
I don't know if I remember it, but you got to be in my
punkasscats@gmail.com.
Say that again.
punkasscats@gmail.com.
How could I forget that? punkasscats@gmail.com. Love it.
Yeah.
That's good. I was going to say, you know, there's this thing called Discord that we've been on. Some of us from NLA went over there. Terry's on it and a couple of other ones of us. And I'll tell you what, you're looking for material. They got a lot of memes and stuff that you can pull off of that would be great to, you know, like put
on
Facebook.
I'll
tell you what, it's a platform that people that play games with each other use. That's where that's how it developed. But they're using it for, you know, Patriot stuff. It's hooked up to that Patriot Soapbox. So it's called, you got to download the app on your computer. It's very simple. And it's called Discord. D-I-S-C-O-R-D. And go in and join and then just peruse around there. We have an NLA room in there too, by the way. And I'm telling you, for what you're looking for, there's a lot of material in there. It's pretty cool, a lot of it, too. So.
Yeah, well, I need a couple more of those handbooks. Mine's falling apart. The one I use to show people all the time, it's falling apart. The cover's falling off of it.
Now, that's the one for sheriffs and jurors, or you're not talking about... Okay.
Juries, bailiffs, sheriffs, and
Right. Yeah. Somehow, I got the original ones. I got a bunch of them. But I never got that many of that jurors and bailiffs one for some reason. I don't know. I'll look and see.
Well, hang on. It's right here. It's the one that we. And, you know, we sent to every judge. It says, for jurors, sheriffs, bailiffs, and justices.
Right. And for some reason, I didn't get a whole bunch of extra ones of them. Like the original one, I went crazy buying them and getting them. And I still have original.
Well, I bought like 300 of them, and I'm gone. I'm out. You know, I don't have any more. Mine's taking a beating.
Yeah, let me talk to John and see if he's got something hid away, and I'll check my stash. But I don't think that's the one I don't think I have. But I'll tell you what, if I can find them, you're welcome to them. All right.
Okay. All right.
Because I know you're out there doing the good work, and you'll put it to good use.
All right. Appreciate it.
You're our official traveling salesman. You know that.
The lifeblood of the country.
There you go. Yeah, that's the new cowboy is the truck driver, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, really good to hear from you. And
thanks, and have a merry Christmas. And
yeah,
I'll be home for Christmas in a couple days.
Good for you.
Thanks.
No.
Hi, everybody.
Christmas. Yeah. Good night.
Good night.
Yeah. So next up is Jim from New York. Go ahead, Jim. Hello, Jim.
Yeah, I'm here.
I think I bumped.
I'm here.
Crystal. Yeah, I hear you. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay. Yeah, I do believe I have some of those handbooks.
Oh, we got it.
I have another box of them here.
Oh, cool. I don't have an address for Jay, but I can email him. Maybe get a mailing address. We could send him some.
He said he had his email address, so I'll just email him and then we'll get together with each other and I can send him a couple.
There you go.
Or if he wants to throw me enough to cover shipping, you know, that's a different story.
Right.
I got a box from Carl. You know, I think Carl bought 1,000 of them and he gave me a box of 100.
Cool. Have you heard from Carl lately?
No, it's probably been a month since I heard from him.
Yeah, I got to get a hold of him. I got some stuff to throw by him. And we need to get back together again and continue ours. Everything went up in smoke with my building. I'm like in such a disarray. It's unbelievable. I'm trying to get my feet back on the ground. It's been hard, you know, very distracted. But, you know, we had a lot of good things going on, and I think we need to continue that. You know.
Yeah, I tried to get a hold of John to see if, you know, we could go down actually last Saturday. I didn't hear back from him, so I didn't get a hold of you because, you know, first thing I got to do is get a hold of him.
Well, he's so sick, you can't believe it. He's way under the weather.
Yeah, well, he pushed himself too far. So I hope he gets a lot of good reparation out of all of this, and then he can come back twice as strong, you know?
Yeah, he needs to rest. That's a big part of it, yes. So, you know, we had a lot of stuff we were working on that kind of got left in the wind.
Yeah, I was kind of saying to Jan that he should probably try and do just what we ask him to do, you know? I mean, this way he's not pushing himself. It's like, you know, he would say, well, I'll have to do that. I said, well, you got to get one thing done before you go to the other, you know? And, of course, he wants everything right now, like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, you know, the trouble is nobody beat you harder than you beat yourself, and John's good at beating himself, believe me.
Yeah.
You know, he's very, very driven with his work, so. And I don't know. But there's so much stuff going on in the country right now, and we want to stay on top of our. We're going to have opportunity here that we don't want to miss. You know, we need to be prepared.
Yeah, and it might be like 2 weeks away.
That's my fear. I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop because I'm one of these guys like that been predicting it for years. So it's like. You know what I get? Oh, you said that. You're always saying that. You know? Yeah, but I'm always saying that. But all the tea leaves weren't lined up like they are now. You know?
Yeah, I mean, with the House and the Senate going the other way after the first of the year here, I mean, they're talking like they're going to go full bore at them. You know?
That's
but they must know what he probably has on them, you know. So I don't know. I can't wait. Really, it does seem to be exciting times coming up.
I think he could take 50% of them out if he really wanted to. I think he's playing cat and mouse with them. And you know they're like the bully. They're not gonna lay down until they have to turn around and run like a little baby. But they're gonna do their smoke and mirrors and temper tantrums and jump up and down right to the bloody end. You know, there's so much.
Well, I like the idea of this government shutdown coming up.
Give us a break. Shut them down. Exactly. We don't need them. The more they're shut down, the better off we are. They can't spend our money then, right?
Let's see just how reliant we are on them. I think we'll find out that
there is no such thing as a shutdown. That whole thing is a lie. What it means is they don't get any of their extra money. They still have all the infrastructure money. They still have everything they need to run. You know what I mean? That's like when a school goes on, you know, when a school system, the budget doesn't pass, and they go on an austerity budget, quote unquote. Do you know what that is? That's last year's numbers. Exactly. Big deal. I've been living on last year's numbers for how long? You know?
Right.
So anyway, okay. If you got nothing else, I'm gonna invite Brent to say a few words. Seems like this would be a good time. We're getting down to the wire, so he's got about 30 minutes, and it's been good talking to you. And hey, Merry Christmas, blessed Christmas, and Happy New Year. I probably won't hear or see from you before then.
Well, maybe not. I would like to get a hold of you and John, you know, like I said, to come down and get together. So,
well, I'm willing to do that. We got so much to hash over. It's not even funny. So it would be nice to get a meeting up. Let's see how he feels this week. See if he can recoup some, you know?
Okay.
You know, so.
Well, this might not be, let's see, you got this week and then, yeah, I guess we could do something this week. Yeah.
Well, I don't know you're going to do something this week because I talked to John and he doesn't sound good at all. He was tired just talking to me, you know?
Yeah, I heard it too when I heard him.
Yeah, he's running out. Like he doesn't have any oxygen, so it's not good. Anyway.
Yeah.
But even between New Year's and Christmas or whatever, just get a hold of me and we'll see. We'll call him together and see how he's doing.
Okie doke.
Okay.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot. Okay, Brent, if you want to unmute yourself. And
hey, this is Jay
Brent.
Again.
Hey, Jay, yeah, go ahead.
Hey, if he wanted to send me those books, if I could buy 20 to 50 of them from you, I'll pay for the shipping and everything. I'm on the... I'm in the website under administrator for Yancey County, North Carolina. My contact information's down there.
Okay.
It's the last county in North Carolina, Yancey County. And my email is punkasscats, punkasscats at gmail.com. Thanks.
Okay. I'm sure he heard. He's here.
I think my phone number's on there under administrator, so I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
Give me a call if you want.
Okay, very good. Great to hear from you, too, Jay. Bye. Bye-bye. Okay. I don't see Brent yet. Jan, or Terry, can you unmute him if he hasn't done it? I don't know if he can do himself or what. I don't know if he has to get in the queue or he has the ability to unmute himself. There you go. I see that he was unmuted.
Yeah, he was unmuted, and he has the capability. Just,
oh, okay.
I hope he's still
So, Brent is the author of The Excellence of the Common Law and a commentator of ours, and I'm going to introduce him here tonight to say some words on the Constitution and whatever else suits his fancy. Go ahead, Brent. I heard him there. Now I lost him again. He's unmuted, but maybe he doesn't have good service. Seemed like he came in and went out. No. There you are. I heard you again. Oh, we lost him. Maybe he's dialing back in. Let's give him a couple more minutes.
I sure like all these ideas everybody was coming up with. I hope to come to Thursday night and we can talk about them.
Yeah, well, that's get these wonderful, beautiful minds together. Right.
That is the issue. That the people who understand, out of the people that are in the United States, there's a small percentage that understand that, we do have the Constitution and we do have common law. And then there's a small percentage of them that think that there's some urgency to learning all this stuff. And then there's a very small percentage of them that actually know how to lead and go on. We've been trained to have it all given to us. It's unfortunate. But we haven't.
Am I on yet?
Yeah,
you were there. Yeah. Oh. If you can hear me. We can now. Okay. Well, if it's a good time to start, I'll go ahead.
It's a perfect time. Your timing is okay. Perfect.
All right, thanks.
I introduced you already. I don't know if you heard me, so just dive right into it. Go ahead.
All right, thank you. Well, I heard you, but, yeah, you couldn't hear me, but this is Brent. Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com. My statements are mine and may or may not represent the opinions of National Liberty Alliance. But as always, I'm grateful for an opportunity to say a few words. The only remedy for the lawlessness we see is true law. There is no other remedy. There never has been. There never will be. Violence won't even help. It won't help a bit. Screaming at people won't help. I've tried all these things. Not violence, but screaming at people. That doesn't help either. Because people have to have a want to understand, to accept. It's not really a matter of intelligence. It's just a matter of accepting what true law is. We have an expression of true law called the laws of nature. And we have another expression of it called the laws of nature's God. The first expression is unwritten, the laws of nature. Unwritten in the nature of things around us. We can see it. We can observe it. We can write it down. That's the first volume, our Declaration of 76, then also references the laws of nature's God. That's the second volume, and it's written. And that phrase, laws of nature's God, arose from the Scottish Enlightenment. It was picked up by John Locke, Tom Jefferson, from John Locke, put it in the Declaration of 76. And the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God was the cry of the Scottish Enlightenment that overtook all of Britain and then all of the English-speaking world, and it said that there are two revelations of the Maker to his creature, man. And those are the two volumes, one written, one unwritten. There is no other expression from the Maker of his will to his creature, man. Those two are all there is, but those two are a lot. And to try to spend one's life understanding them and mastering them is important. We say, well, why? What about the Constitution of the United States? Where does that fit in this? Well, our Constitution of the United States is a record of what men agreed from their observations were the laws of nature. And those aren't new. The expressions of our Constitution are a compilation, a summation of what we would call our common law of government. Our common law of government, our common law is not a list of laws. It's a course to follow, a process. We just finished last week talking about our United States Constitution, Section 8, and made the point that everything in Section 8, or everything in Article 1, Article 1, Section 8, but everything in Article 1, is about how things are to be done. Not what is to be done, but how it is to be done. And if you follow the course, the process of how things are to be done, then the result will take care of itself and you don't have to worry about it. You don't even have to know what the result's going to be till you get there. You're following a course. So Article 1, Section 7, Clause 2 says things like, every bill which shall have passed the House of Representatives and the Senate shall, before it becomes law, be presented to the President of the United States. If he approve it, he shall sign it.
But if he shall return it with his objections, et cetera, et cetera. It's a statement of how things are to be done. Not what is to be done, but how. And that is the substance of our entire common law, is how. Not what, but how. That's why due process is the most salient, important right our common law knows. Well, we've been through that, so that brings us to Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1. The Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes. Now, there's more written here than that, but I want to stop right there. Let me read that again. The Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes. Now, let's ask ourselves, and this is a good way to approach a writing of legal significance, such as this one, the Constitution. The first thing we should ask ourselves, maybe it'd be a good way to do it, the power of observation, just look at it. What does it not say? It doesn't say that the president shall have the power to lay and collect taxes. It doesn't say the Supreme Court shall have the power to lay and collect taxes. What does it say? It says Congress, not any Congress, the Congress. Well, which Congress is the Congress? Well, that's the one that was referred to above, the Congress of the United States. The Congress of the United States shall have the power to do two things, among other things, but these two things the Congress of the United States has the power to do. Number one, lay taxes. That means lay the tax burden on somebody. But most importantly, and apparently utterly ignored, it says that Congress also has the power to collect taxes. It doesn't say the president has the power to collect taxes. Well, if it doesn't say the president has the power to collect taxes, why is it that the president is collecting taxes? You don't see Congress collecting taxes. Congress doesn't go out and collect taxes, and Congress doesn't commission anybody to collect taxes. Congress doesn't pay any attention or take up any responsibility to collect any taxes. I think it's important we ask ourselves why, when the Constitution is so blatantly clear about it. It's not like it's a matter of ambiguity here that Congress doesn't have the power to do both lay and collect taxes. But I would imagine if Congress really did pick up their power here. And by the way, I don't know that the Constitution says anybody else has the power to do that, but from the beginning of our country, presidents have taken up that power. And the most pronounced example of that when the country started was George Washington's collection of first the federal troops and his march north, and he commanded them himself, which was a bad precedent for a president to do, to don a uniform. None of our presidents since Washington have ever donned a military uniform. And he went up to put down the Whiskey Rebellion. Why? They said they weren't going to pay taxes. And he was going to make sure they paid taxes. He was making whiskey, and he said he paid taxes on it. So he was going to make sure they paid taxes. Well, I just throw the idea out. Maybe there's something I'm missing here. I like to take the Constitution, read it, and take it for what it says. You don't have to be a highfalutin scholar of some kind to read the Constitution and say, now, wait a minute, this is what it says. But I'd wager to say if Congress were the ones that were actually collecting the taxes, they wouldn't be as oppressive as the IRS. Why is that? Well, if somebody was oppressive toward you that Congress had commissioned to collect taxes, I don't imagine you'd vote for that congressman anymore. Matter of fact, you'd make the connection real quick. Hey, wait a minute. Congress is the one that's in charge of collecting taxes, and I don't like the way they're going about doing it. I think we'll just vote them all out. But the way it is, the IRS collects taxes. And the president says, well, I'm not collecting the taxes. That's IRS business. I don't do that. Well, he supposedly is in charge or has the power to shut them down or to discipline them or fire them, or appoint a new head of the Internal Revenue Service. Well, simply, if we would follow what the Constitution says. The Constitution, again, is the agreement of men, certain men from each state, and it is their agreement of what they believe through their own observations our common law government is, proven through centuries of trial and error. They tried to whittle it down even better, and as James Wilson of the Supreme Court said, to return us to the first principles of government as they stood before the Norman conquest of the year 1066. The power to lay and collect taxes, that means taking of a person's private property, and to declare war, that means sending a man to kill other people or be killed. These two powers are Congress's greatest powers, never to be allowed into the hand of any other. The power to take your personal property and to send your children off to kill other people or be killed are the two greatest powers of the Congress of the United States. This clause ties our Constitution to its preamble. In order to narrow government's powers, especially the government in Washington, D.C., and especially limiting taxes and spending powers to three purposes. It says them right here in this Section 8, Clause 1, repeating the very words from the preamble of the Constitution. There are only three purposes allowed for taxing and spending money for our government to do that. These three purposes are to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and the general welfare of the United States. And this preamble and these words here distinguish paying from providing and from promoting. Promoting, providing, and paying, three things. We are to allow Congress to pay debts, provide for the common defense, that means spend money, and promote the general welfare. We are not to provide, or the government is not to provide the general welfare. The government is promoted. That's different than providing. We get those turned around. By the way, the general welfare, that word general is important in this sense. It doesn't say welfare. That's what it doesn't say. It says general welfare. Well, what does the word general mean? Well, generally speaking, people generally think they generally know what the word general means, and I found that we don't know what it means. A general means applicable in all cases. We have general officers in the Army. We call them generals. That means they're a general officer. What that means is the orders of a general officer applies to everybody under him. His orders are general orders. They apply to everybody, no matter what. Military men have general orders that they have to learn when they're in boot camp. There are 11 of them. And they apply to all, everybody, from the admiral right on down to the seaman deuce, and the general right on down to the private. They're general orders. So general welfare is welfare that applies to everyone without exception. And welfare that targets this group or this person or that person, if the government of the United States is doing that, they've gone outside the scope of the granted powers of our Constitution. And what they're doing is unlawful, which means that most of what Congress does in taxing and spending is unlawful, because most of what it does not go to the general welfare. It goes to particular welfare. If you're this person, that person, or a member of this group, that group, you get it and other people don't, whatever it is, the welfare, the money, the benefits. Our preamble thus distinguishes paying, providing, and promoting. As I'd said, indeed, the people's support of the general government is a light burden. The general government, by the way, is the government in Washington, D.C. It's general. That means what the government in Washington, D.C. does has to generally
generally, without exception, apply the same uniform application of the laws. Uniform application of any benefit government gives has to equally apply to everybody. But it doesn't. That's not the way it's done now. Just pointing that out. Providing for the general welfare of the United States is to foster the good of the entire country without exception, never of one group but not another. And such favoritism fosters never-ending, ruthless attempts of one group to use government power to plunder another. The key device for such plundering becoming the income tax. Plundering. Some of you no doubt have heard of, and others have read, the Frenchman Bastiat's book called Law, a very famous book among certain circles. Well, Bastiat was a frustrated Frenchman because he finally got toward the end of his life and he looked at the history of his own country going back before his life and up to his life, and he said, this is madness. What's madness? And this was the theme of his book. He said, everything in government is a matter of one group, in France anyway, one group plundering another group. That's all we ever do. This group gets their hands on the levers of power, and they plunder everybody else. And then the people that are being plundered, they get all fired up. They want to get a control of government. They get a control of government. Instead of doing what's right, they go to plundering the people that have been plundering them. What does that mean? Well, that means that France, and this is true of France, just as one example of dozens, France lives, has always lived, and today lives in a state of perpetual revolving plundering. That's why we call it revolution. It just revolves from one side to the other, then back again, round and round it goes. This group plundering that group plundering this group. Whoever gets their hands on the levers of government power will plunder everybody else in revenge. It's a system of never-ending vengeance, revolving revolution, one after another. Well, that's why our Constitution of the United States says general, not particular welfare. If it becomes particular welfare, then one group will plunder the other. The government, to get money to pass out welfare, the goodies of welfare, has to take it from people. They don't work for it. They just take it at the point of a gun. That's why we say here that the welfare must be general. Well, of great note, this clause gives all power of taxation and tax collection to Congress, as I mentioned a while ago, citing three kinds of taxes. It cites first, duties. Duties are taxes on goods coming into the United States. That's also called external revenue. External revenue as distinguished from internal revenue. Internal revenue is taxes on Americans. External revenue is taxes on the people bringing goods into America. Those are called duties. Border taxes, custom duties, customs duties, that is, for which the United States Coast Guard, the United States Customs, Border Patrol are enforcement arms. IRS agent was in my office, well, two of them one time, looking for one of my clients, snooping around. My client happened to be there, sitting there talking to me. He was in the building. They thought he'd be in the building. I don't know why. I don't remember. They were investigating. Anyway, I invited him to sit down, and I got to talking to him. One fellow said he'd worked for the IRS for I forget how many decades. I said, well, said you ought to be ready to retire. He said, yeah, I'm about ready. And he was being friendly. And I said, well, I wonder what this guy knows about tax collection. So I began to talk about different things. And I don't remember how the subject came up, but I said something about the U.S. Coast Guard being a division of Internal Revenue Service and the External Revenue Service and the Treasury Department. That's the way to put it. He said, that can't be true. He said, that's not true. Well, I said, well, sure it's true. And I reached behind me and I pulled a book off the shelf. I knew where it said it in the official language of the law, and I showed it to him. And he said, well, I worked for the Treasury Department for the last number of decades, and I had no idea the Coast Guard was part of our outfit. I said, well, sure. Well, now, I think since then, the Coast Guard is no longer a part of the Treasury Department. Somebody told me that. Congress did something. But from the very beginning of our country, the Coast Guard was part of the Treasury Department because the only revenue that the general government in Washington, D.C. had was the revenue not from internal revenue, but from external revenue, namely duties on goods coming into the United States. And the government ran very well on that external revenue, well, with a little more, with a little liquor tax and tobacco tax, but mostly external revenue up until 1913, and really beyond that, because the income tax started out very slow. Most people didn't file a tax return. 98% of people in the country didn't even file a tax return. It wasn't for them. As they said, it was for the rich guy. We're going to soak the rich man, the one that makes $100,000 or more. I forget what the figure was. It's always that way, isn't it? We're going to plunder somebody. So the folk that didn't have $1 million, they were out to plunder the people that did. Well, how long did that last? It didn't last long. And now I'm running for office. When I was running for office, I remember looking into these matters and discovering, found out that the IRS was auditing and even sending waitresses to jail because they didn't declare all their tips. That's the way it always works, isn't it? We'll plunder you for a while, and then other people get their hands on the levers of power, and they start plundering other people, and the rich people got tired of being plundered, so now they're plundering the people who don't have a lot of money. And on, around and around in the revolution, in the revolving plundering, as Bastiat says, it goes, and we're falling into that trap that we have avoided for so many decades. Gerard, it's 9 o'clock straight up, and I'm going to call in the dogs and quit. Unless you want me to say something else, but I don't want to go over time.
No, that's good. I think it's a good place to stop. So good call. Good point you made there. I'm sure everybody
should
know all those things. Thanks a lot. I want to wish everybody a very blessed Christmas and Happy New Year. We'll be back here after the New Year. Next Monday is going to be Christmas Eve, and the Monday after will be New Year's. So, we'll talk to you then. We'll see you back here, same time and same station, 2 weeks from now. Thank you, everybody. God bless.
Good night.
Good night.